In August 1923, the dollar reached a million. We read it with a slight gasp, as if it were the announcement of some spectacular record. A fortnight later, that had become insignificant, for as if it had drawn new energy at the million mark, the dollar increased its pace tenfold and began to mount by hundreds of millions and milliards at a time. In September, a million marks no longer had any practical value, and a milliard became the unit of payment. At the end of October, it was a billion. By then, terrible things had happened. The Reichsbank stopped printing notes. Its notes, 10 million, 100 million, had not kept up with events. The dollar and price levels in general had anticipated them. There was no longer any usable currency. For some days, trade came to a standstill, and in the poorer parts of the city, the people resorted to force and plundered the groceries. The atmosphere became revolutionary once again. In mid-August, the government fell amid fierce fighting in the streets. A little later, the Ruhr War was abandoned. We gave no more thought to it. How long ago had it been since the Ruhr occupation had made us swear to be a united nation of brothers? Now we began to expect the downfall of the state, even the dissolution of the Reich, some terrible political event corresponding to the events in our private lives. There had never been so many rumours. The Rhineland had seceded. Bavaria had seceded. The Kaiser had come back. The French had marched in. The political leagues, both right-wing and left-wing, which had lain dormant for years, suddenly became feverishly active. They held rifle training sessions in the woods around Berlin. Rumours of a Black Army circulated, and a good deal was heard about the Day of Reckoning. It was difficult to distinguish the possible from the impossible. A Rhenish Republic did in fact come into being for a few days. In Saxony for some weeks there was a communist government, against which the Reich government dispatched the army. One morning the newspapers declared that the garrison of Kustrin, a few kilometres away, had begun a march on Berlin. About this time, too, the phrase, "Traitors will be dealt with summarily," gained currency. The police notices on the poster columns now concerned not just burglaries, but also missing persons and murders. People disappeared by the dozens. Almost always it was people who had something to do with the leagues. Years later, their skeletons might be dug up in some nearby wood. Within the leagues, it had become the practice to dispose of unreliable and suspicious comrades without ceremony. When we heard rumours of this, it did not seem as incredible as it would have done in normal, civilized days. Indeed, the atmosphere had gradually become apocalyptic. Saviours appeared everywhere, people with long hair and hair shirts declaring that they had been sent by God to save the world. The most successful in Berlin was a certain Hauser, who used posters and mass meetings and had many followers. His Munich counterpart, according to the press, was a certain Hitler, who, however, differed from his Berlin rival by the exciting coarseness of his speeches, which reached new levels of vulgarity in the extravagance of their threats and their unconcealed sadism. While Hitler wanted to bring about the millennium by a massacre of all the Jews, there was a certain Lamberti in Thuringia who wanted to do it by folk dancing, singing and frolicking. Each saviour had a style of his own. No one and nothing was surprising. Surprise had become a long-forgotten sensation. The Munich saviour, Hitler, filled the headlines for 2 days in November with a ridiculous attempt to stage a revolution in a beer cellar. In fact, the revolutionaries had been dispersed by a salvo of police fire as they left the cellar, and that was the end of the matter. Yet for a whole day people seriously thought this was the expected revolution. Our classics master, hearing the news, joyfully informed us that within a few years we would all be soldiers again. His instincts were quite accurate. Indeed, the fact that such an adventure could take place at all was far more interesting than its failure. The saviours obviously had a chance. Nothing was impossible. The dollar stood at a billion. Paradise had just been missed by a hair's breadth. Then something really unexpected did happen. The incredible fairy story began to circulate that there would soon be stable money again, and a little later it materialized. Small, ugly, grey-green notes with one Rentenmark written on them. When you offered them in payment for the first time, you waited in suspense to see what would happen. Nothing did. They were actually accepted, and you were handed your goods, goods worth 1 billion marks. The same thing happened the next day, and the day after. Incredible. The dollar stopped climbing, so did shares, and when one converted shares into Rentenmarks, they were reduced to nothing, like everything else. So no one was left with anything. But wages and salaries were paid out in Rentenmarks, and some time later, wonder upon wonder, small change also appeared, solid, bright coins. You could jingle them in your pockets, and they even kept their value. On Thursday, you could still buy something for the money received on the previous Friday. The world was, after all, full of surprises. A few weeks earlier, Stresemann had become Chancellor. Politics became much quieter. No one spoke any more of the decay of the Reich. Grumbling, the leagues returned to their hibernation. Many members deserted. One scarcely heard of any more missing persons. The saviors disappeared from the cities. Politics seemed to consist solely of a dispute among the parties as to who had discovered the Rentenmark. The Nationalists said it was Karl Helferich, a conservative deputy and former minister of the Kaiser. The left hotly contradicted this. It was, they claimed, a stalwart Democrat and staunch Republican, a certain Dr. Schacht. This was a time after the flood. Everything had been lost, but the waters were receding. The older generation did not yet dare to harp upon the value of experience. The young were a bit put out. 21-year-old bank directors began to look around for clerking jobs again, and high school seniors had to adjust to having 20 marks pocket money. Of course, a few victims of stabilization committed suicide, but many more people peered timidly out of their holes and asked themselves if life was possible once more. There was a feeling of the morning after in the air, but also of relief. At Christmas, the whole of Berlin became a vast fair. Everything cost 10 pfennigs, and everyone bought rattles, marzipan animals, and other such things just to show that one could really buy something for 10 pfennigs again, and perhaps also to forget the past year, indeed the past 10 years, and feel like a child once more. All the shops had notices, peacetime prices. For the first time since the war, it really felt like peace.